We're pretty clear that this story actually happened, although in the early church it was found in Luke 21 or at the end of John, or in the Eastern church not at all for a couple hundred years. So that's why you will find that it is listed as an aside, which could be other places in the New Testament. It occurs during the Festival of Booths, the festival of what I would call lean-tos, where you take a couple of poles and you put a tarp over them and you call it home for a week. It's a festival in which, in John 7, we are told there are many crowds. People from all over Israel have come, and it's a time when they remember that God was with them for 40 years in the wilderness. And during those 40 years, he provided water in the morning, and he provided a fire at night for them to follow and to protect them. And so they have candles at night, and they have water every morning brought in ceremonially. So there's large crowds around. And Jesus has been, he did not want to go to the temple. He said to his brothers, "My time has not yet come," in chapter 7. "So I don't want to go too early to this festival." He is really reluctant to be there, in a way, and doesn't go until halfway through the festival. I think that it is probably placed in John 8 by the 4th century because it actually fits very well with the big tension that develops in chapter 7. So in chapter 7, there's lots of tension arising between the leaders and Jesus. They accuse him, for instance, of having healed a man on the Sabbath. And Jesus says, "Look, Moses said you could circumcise a boy on the Sabbath. If you can circumcise a boy on the Sabbath, what's wrong with healing a whole person on the Sabbath? I mean, Moses would surely approve of that." So he is talking Moses, and he's talking that they are not interpreting him well. "Has not Moses given you the law?" In verse 19 of chapter 7. "Yet none of you keeps the law. So don't start talking to me about the law. You don't keep it yourself." They turn around and say, "You are demon-possessed." Now you know that whenever you're arguing with someone, if you don't know what to say, you just call them a bad name. You just say something about them. "You're crazy, you're stupid, you're whatever. You're demon-possessed." They become increasingly nervous. And Jesus says, "Stop judging by mere appearances and make good judgments." He's accusing the teachers of the law and the scribes, the ones who lead Israel, of really being lousy at judgment. They don't get it. They don't really understand Moses. And the authorities get so nervous that it says they send the temple guards to arrest him in verse 32 of chapter 7. The Pharisees heard the crowd whispering, and the chief priests and Pharisees sent their guards to arrest him. Which leads to a rather interesting story at the end of 7. At the end of 7, it says, I guess it's in verse 45, "Finally, the temple guards went back to the chief priests and Pharisees, who asked them, 'Why didn't you bring him?'" He didn't bring Jesus. They did not arrest Jesus. And they say, "We've never heard anybody speak like this." They speak with authority. He speaks with authority, not like you guys. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a way to get fired by the chief priests, right? The cops come back and say, "You are worse than he is." The cops are very impressed with Jesus. "No one speaks like this man." So in chapter 8, this tension between the leaders and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law is going to lead to a major confrontation. And that's why I think it's probably a good place for this story to be. because it's a major confrontation. Now, I'm going to turn you all. You're going to all raise your hands. Raise your hands. You are all movie directors, and you are filming this incident. Okay, so you're going to film this incident. You can put your hands down. So you are in charge of where the camera goes, of who you focus on, of what's on the faces of people. So let's start by saying, how many roles are there? What are the roles in this incident? One, please. Sorry? The woman. Okay. What else?
Jesus.
Yes? The crowds. How many are in the crowds, do you think? It's a festival of booths with people all over Israel here. And it's in the temple. Lots of people. You're going to go for 100. Yeah, you've got to have a good crowd. And what and their intent on listening to Jesus. So, okay, what else you have? The scribes and Pharisees. Pardon? Yeah, well, that's later, but it's coming. Well done, well done. who's not there is the question. Yes, okay, so here we are. How does the scene start? You're getting the cameras ready. What's the first part of this scene? Now, I would like to say that there's a scene before this one, but I'm going to come back to that. The previous scene, the scene that leads to this scene. But let's just say, what is the early scene on this one? How does it start? Jesus turns up early in the morning, and there's already a lot of people there because they're going to pour the water out on the altar, below the altar, that they do every morning in this ceremony. So there's a big ritual about to happen. And Jesus is there and lots of people. What's the mood? What's the mood in this scene?
Anticipation.
By the by the people. Yeah, they're anticipating a good talk, especially Jesus, because they've been hearing about him. They've heard that he fed 5,000 people, right, with bread in the desert. Who else did that? Moses, right? So yeah, there's words going around talking about him. So they're anticipating. What's Jesus doing? It's kind of interesting. He's sitting. So this is going to be a long talk. And he's sitting, and they are gathered around him. Okay. And anticipation on the face of the people who first seen him, who are there to listen to him. Okay, number two. What happens next? They bring a woman. Okay, how do you film this? How do they bring her? Sorry, others? Do you think they have to drag her? What do they do to her? They make her stand. So Jesus is having a class. Ever had to stand at the front of the class and everybody point their fingers at you? They make her. Do you think they hold on to her? Would you have them hold on to her? How do you get her to stand? Yeah, it's kind of a violent situation. You push or you make. Okay, so she is like in the dock, right? They put her in the dock. They put her in the place where the prisoner is supposed to be. Tell me, what's the look on her face? How do you want?
Fear.
Fear?
Horror.
Horror? Shame? She probably is looking down. That's where she's going to go. Yeah, don't. You probably would not look at your accusers. I don't know. It's interesting just to think about what is going on the scene. It's not necessary that they had caught her 5 minutes ago. She could have been in detention for several days. They could have had this told to them in the last week and they just got her. Now that's why we have to go to a previous scene. What do the Pharisees and the scribes think they need to do after chapter 7? When Jesus is popular, Jesus is challenging their authority, what do they have to do? They have to catch him. Sorry? Find a way to trap him. So, you know, we should go to another scene in which they, the day before, say, how are we going to get this? How are we going to get this man, right? And they come up with a great trap. So I don't know what's on the look of the faces of the accusers. What do you think? Are they angry at the woman? Are they asking for advice? Okay, Nola, you got to tell me what you're saying to your husband. How is he going to get out of this one, baby? I mean, they may think, this is a good trap. We're doing pretty well here. Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking they're a little bit smarty pants right now. They're just a little bit, we've got you on this one. You are in trouble. Anyway, they make her stand. They say this to him. We have caught this woman in the act of adultery in front of witnesses. Now the law of our people, which our ancestor Moses gave us, is quite clear. Moses taught us to kill her. What do you say? I mean, this is... what do you say? We've just raised Moses. Moses, the big authority. Moses, the giver of the law, or the one who received the law. Moses. What do you say about Moses? It's lovely. Okay, so Moses said to kill her. What do you say? If a man commits adultery with another man's wife, they are to kill him and her. Now, there's no him in this story yet, right? Okay. They're not really asking his advice. How does the trap work? In what way is Jesus trapped? So this is the beforehand. They've been discussing. How do we get him? What's the trap? There's three traps. Pardon? Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you. Yeah, because he's going against Moses. He is weak on sin, right? And he is undermining the whole Jewish tradition. He is against all of these traditions. We have every right to throw him out, to do whatever we can to harm him. Okay, or... What if he says? I can't hear it. They'll use his words against him because he is a friend of bums and sinners. Right? He is always weak on sin. He is easy on people who are in trouble. He cares about those who have no power. And so he is going to have to go against himself. And then he's a hypocrite. Because he's been saying one thing and he's doing another. Right? Okay. Or, here's the big trap. Pardon? That's right. So they're going to catch him on not... Well, they're catching themselves on this one, because they're catching themselves on the man's not here, right? But that's, we'll come back to that. There's another trap. Who is allowed to kill somebody in Roman-controlled Palestine? Only the Romans. If he says kill her, they are going to go and up to sidle up to Pilate and say, you know what? We got a guy here who's advising us to kill people. And you say they can't do it. I think you should put him in prison. So you've got a triple trap. Are they smart? Oh man, are they smart. Okay, so what happens next? Well, tell me about this. How does your camera go? How does the camera go now? Jesus kneels. And what does he do? I've got to find a passage here somewhere. And so he kneels, he bent down, and he starts writing on the ground with his finger. Where does the camera go? Is the camera on the accusers? Is the camera on Jesus? Is the camera on the finger? Where do you put the camera? Yes, it says they keep questioning him, because the longer you wait, the more nervous they get. Like they want a quick answer. They want an answer that's going to get him in trouble right now. Come on, what do you say? What do you say? It's obvious. Moses said we should kill her. Isn't it obvious? And he's writing. Now, what is going on for Jesus here? What is he doing? What do you think he's doing? He's taking the momentum away. Yes? The tension is rising. He's undermining their authority. Yeah, it's kind of like, do I have to answer to you guys? Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. I think you have to put the focus a little bit on the finger, because everyone is wondering, what the heck is he writing? What is he doing? Now, who wrote the Ten Commandments? God. With what? With his finger. That's interesting, eh? Is Jesus playing the role of God? I don't know. Is he writing, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife? You know? What is he? I mean, we don't know. That's why I like the story. We really don't know what he's writing. But I would put the camera on the accusers and the finger, because I think the finger takes away the momentum of the guys, of the accusers. They are so impatient to get an answer. And he is doing what God did when the Ten Commandments were written. I don't know that's what he's doing, but it just feels like that. Okay. Now, do they have rocks in their hands? What do you think? Do they have rocks in their hands? Now, Palestine and Israel is a place with a few rocks. If you've ever been there, it's not really hard to find ammo. I don't know if they have the rocks in their hands yet. Yeah, the young ones do. The old ones are not so sure what's going to happen. I don't know. Now, Jesus did not want to go to this festival because his time was not yet. I can't play the role of Jesus. I know I can't. But you kind of wonder sometimes if he says, I knew this would happen. I'm going up to the temple and I'm dead. I mean, his death is already coming. And he's being faced with what he did not want to face yet. This was not the right time from his point of view. So, I've got to catch up with myself here. Notice that Jesus goes on the ground. Significance? What's the significance of going on the ground? Where do you die when you're stoned? On the ground. Who is on the ground? Jesus is on the ground. She's not on the ground, she's standing. If they start throwing rocks, who's going to get hit? I don't know, but you just think. It's like the adult that kneels when the child comes up to talk and gets at eye level with the child. All of a sudden, Jesus is in the vulnerable spot. Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. I'm sorry this is taking too long. But the shadow of the cross is lying right across this story, right? And is Jesus thinking, where's the man? I mean, I knew that Karen would say that right away, but where's the man? Because the law is very clear. The law is very clear. It says, if a man commits adultery with another man's wife, both the adulterer and the adulteress must be stoned. So they're twisting this law halfway. They are not good teachers. They make bad judgments, is what Jesus would say. So I think he's a bit mad, but I'm not sure. Does Jesus ever get mad? Is it okay if he gets upset? Now, what he has also done is he has slowed the whole process down, and now he rises. And there's a major change has occurred. What's the change? The trapped traps you. The man who is supposed to be judged rises as the judge, right? The verdict is coming. And it's going to really surprise them. Because the people who think that they have got Jesus trapped get trapped. What does Jesus say? Let he who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Judge yourselves. Are you fit to be the judge? You are standing in front of the person who is fit to be the judge, and he's judging you. What a change, right? And I'm sure that a couple of these guys look at the leader of the meeting the day before and say, you idiot. You idiot. Why did you think you could trap this man? I mean, maybe some of our cops were right. Never man spoke like this man. Darn. Even maybe stronger than darn. Why did we let you do this? Mr. Smarty Pants, now what do you do? And then it says in effect, you may be guilty, she may be guilty, but are you fit to be the judge? So, then what happens? Next. Does it say he's writing the second time? I can't remember. I got to find my passage here. And wrote on the ground. Yes, he writes again. Okay. It's quieter. The whole, wouldn't you say that silence is just plain quieter? I mean, little shuffling feet. Actually, this, I think, what's on the face of the woman? What do you want on the face of the woman? Well, a little bit of hope. A little, yeah. Yeah, now, and When does she get released? If they're holding her, when does she get released? Probably sometime in this scene, right? And what's her first clue that everything's okay? Well, one of the clues could be all the rocks falling, right? She hears the thud, and they're not on her. I mean, I don't know. But all of a sudden, she knows there's hope. And then what happens?
The older ones kneel first.
Yes.
And the older ones leave.
He gives them time to judge themselves. Yes. Yes. Okay. So he kneels and gives them time. And then it says, what does Jesus do? He straightens up again and he asks her, where the heck are they? Where is it? How many can you count now? And he says, look out at where the jury was. The jury's gone. And he's very clear. Have they condemned you? Like I said, like I'm not been in this scene. I've been busy. What happened? She has to confirm to him that she's free. Isn't it lovely? You know, if you're going to give somebody visible clues that they're free, it's much better than just words. Just look around. It's empty. You're free. No one, sir, no one has. Then neither do I condemn you. Go and leave your life of sin. So, let's reflect on this story. A few things. First of all, what do you do when people are mad? And they're angry. Well, if you use it correctly, Al. If you use it correctly. The first thing you do is you slow the process down. You pause. You think. You do not let them set the agenda. When he goes down on the ground, they think their agenda is what's counting. But you have said, I am under a different agenda. And they start to get nervous because they realize you are not going to just answer quickly. You might even think. So I think the first thing is just pause and get your own anger under control too. Seek clarity. What are the real issues here? They are insincere. They have not brought the man. They are not even interested in the woman. They just want to get Jesus. They are using her as a pawn to kill him. So, and they are supposed to have brought the man. So Jesus goes quiet, refusing to let their agenda force him into a hasty decision. That's a good thing to do when people are mad. When he kneels, they are in control. When he rises, he is in control. It's lovely. Now, let's just talk about this for just a minute. One of the most nice things about Jesus is what he doesn't like. If you don't know what he doesn't like, you haven't really met him yet. In fact, that's probably true of all of us, you know. If you really want to know somebody, it's really useful to find out what makes them mad. What makes them, what is really a concern for them? So, what makes Jesus mad? Well, let's throw a few things up, Kenneth. This is Matthew 23. I would suggest that Jesus is probably mad in this discussion. Especially if you get to the last verse, which says something like, "You snakes, you brood of vipers, how will you escape being condemned to hell?" I would say he's not a happy person at this point. He is saying something strongly. And he is strongly against what? So pick a few things he is strongly against in this passage. What does he not like?
Hypocrisy.
What else? Have to say it loud.
Wickedness.
Yes. Abuse of power. You lay guilt on people and you don't do a thing to help. Right? Abuse of power. What else?
Injustice.
Pardon?
Injustice.
Injustice. Yes.
Neglect.
Self-righteousness. Yeah. Doing things to be seen and praised, right? Yeah. Now, there are others. Remember what he says about someone who misleads a child? It would be, pardon?
Tie a
millstone around a neck and drown him in the sea. This is what you call nice, gentle talk. I mean, there are things, abusing of children is not on Jesus' good list. And I love him for it. See, this is the funny thing. We love him for what he didn't like. Most of us. Now, it's not really much fun turning up in front of him because unless you're good yourself, you might feel a little nervous. But at the same time, you love what he does not like. What ticks him off makes me love him. I hope it's true for you. So, that's just a few things. There's lots of things here that we could talk about. However, let's just reflect that we are not the ones who condemn in the end. It's not our job to decide who's in and who's out. It's not our job to condemn everybody, especially when we are trying to judge it in such a way as that we hope to kill them. If we hope to help them, that is different. But if we hope to kill them, it's time to stop sinning. We gain a great vision of Jesus in the story, which really is helpful. Grace and truth, we are told in John chapter 1, is the two themes of this book. And that we see both of them in this story. But be wary of messing with Jesus, because you may try to examine him, but you're going to end up on the operating table every ripping time. And that's what they're thinking. Why did we do this? Yes. We stand in judgment of him, but in the end, he is the judge. When he kneels, he is vulnerable. When he rises, he's the judge. Don't you love the way our Lord cares for this woman and really helps her see that she is free? He shifts the limelight from her onto the accusers. We all have accusers. Some of them are within us. We're pretty good at it ourselves. Thank God we have one who forgives. And help people who've confessed their sin to be able to say, no one is here to forgive, to accuse you. Help them to see it. So, Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag Archipelago writes one of his scenes. This is when all the people who were enemies of the state of Russia are shipped to Siberia to die in prison freezing. And one of these guys comes in this scene in to see the warden in the Gulag Archipelago, the warden of the prison. And he sees on the edge of the desk, when the warden is still quite busy, his file. And on the file it says his name and all the charges against him, right down the page. All the things that the state has him for forever. And it says in big red letters on top of it, to be kept forever. For us, it's forgotten forever. Thanks be to God.